This is Berlin calling via stations DJB 15.2 megacycles, DJD 11.77 megacycles, and DXB 9.61 megacycles per second. We are now going to broadcast the third news bulletin in English in tonight's program for North America. Here is another time check coming, this time only for North America, and in English besides. 10 seconds to go, and it will be 10:34 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Now watch out. Here we are. German fighting planes, during reconnaissance flights they carried out over the North Sea, despite very unfavorable weather conditions, encountered hostile naval forces 125 miles northwest of Drontheim in the evening of April the 11th. They immediately attacked the enemy, although they were subjected to very heavy anti-aircraft fire from the hostile ships and to counterattacks by enemy airplanes. A hostile aircraft carrier was hit by a bomb of the heaviest caliber and severely damaged. An enemy cruiser was also badly damaged by two direct hits aft and amidships. Since several bombs exploded very close to other ships, it can be taken for granted that the enemy suffered further losses. The German planes returned from their attack without losses of their own. When they left the scene of the battle, they saw huge clouds of dark smoke hanging over the badly hit aircraft carrier. The damaged cruiser drifted about with a heavy list. Heavy damage was inflicted on French and British naval forces which tried to break through the Skagerrak, reports from Göteborg by Swedish journalists declare. One heavy French cruiser of the 10,000-ton class was sunk. It is believed to have been the cruiser Foch, which was launched last year. Furthermore, the Swedish reports speak of heavy damage done to a French battleship, which was probably the Dunkirk. In Sweden, where the reports have created a stir, this attempt by British and French naval units to force their way through the mine barrage is regarded as a gigantic failure. The eyes of the world continue to be focused on Norway. At the Western Front, the days continue to pass quietly, apart from slight artillery fire on both sides. The German operations in Norway continued according to plan, and the German units there have been reinforced by men and by supplies of ammunition and heavy weapons. Although the most important strategical points, which were occupied on the first day, are firmly in German hands, they had to be prepared for defense against possible enemy attacks. In general, calm prevails in Norway. Particularly noteworthy is the good understanding arrived at with the commander of Oslo, who has declared himself prepared to use the Norwegian defense weapons, including anti-aircraft batteries, in the event that British or French planes were sighted over the Norwegian capital. So far, all enemy air attacks have been ineffective and have been repulsed with losses for the enemy, just as the attacks of enemy naval units ended in failure. It is obvious that at the moment, no details can be given on individual actions fought at sea or in the air, as such information might be valuable to the enemy. In London, desperate attempts are being made to make the world believe that the frustrated operations of the Western powers are still going on. The enemy press, wireless, and official statements are therefore continuously contradicting themselves, with the result that they have to issue denials later. In excellent collaboration, the three branches of the German defense forces are continuing to consolidate their positions and are completely ignoring enemy propaganda. Germany's lightning action has prevented British troops from standing there where German units are keeping watch today. Although the planned British action against Norway was thoroughly prepared, the British commands misjudged Germany's striking power and speed. Otherwise, they would not have taken steps to erect ammunition dumps and reserves of arms in Norway before their expeditionary forces could approach the Norwegian coast. Thus, it has happened that German units have captured 5 British freighters loaded with British weapons and other war material in the harbor of Bergen, whilst the British troops, for whom this material was intended, were prevented from landing in spite of the protection of the mighty British fleet. It is particularly noteworthy that Germany's whole action in Norway was carried out within reach of the British naval forces. The whole British fleet, recently reinforced by French units, has not succeeded in delaying, let alone preventing, the landing of German troops at any single point. Britain has in no way been able to change the fait accompli. Where British naval forces attempted to attack the German positions, as for instance at Narvik, they were repulsed with heavy losses and had to withdraw. Another example of the skill and striking power of the German army was revealed in a report of the bold move in which the German troops advanced over Hamar to Elverum on the night of April the 9th. In the advance, the numerically inferior German troops disarmed several Norwegian battalions with 80 officers and captured 500 rifles and 4 cannon. Berlin is continuing the third news in English in tonight's transmission for North America. Winston Churchill's speech in the House of Commons was a masterpiece in the art of perverting the truth. Beyond this, it was filled with depressing admissions and excuses so lame that one was prone to wonder if this really was the same chest-beating braggart of a few weeks ago who boastfully claimed the German Navy to have been swept from the seas and England to be the world's mistress of the waves. The Right Honorable Mr. Churchill, suddenly showing himself from an entirely different side, meekly admitted that the Western powers had not taken any Norwegian ports. American radio listeners will remember that the official British news agency, Reuter, reported the taking of Bergen, Trondheim, and Narvik by the British. Then Mr. Churchill, with suspicious frankness, admitted that 2 more British destroyers were sunk. They were the Glowworm and the Gurkha. Beyond this, Mr. Churchill whined that the battleship Rodney was hit by a heavy bomb and badly damaged, and that 2 British cruisers were less severely damaged. An examination of Mr. Churchill's confessions, however, revealed that what he meant to be a frank admission was nothing more than a further distortion of the truth. Mr. Churchill used the opportunity of his speech in the House of Commons today to admit losses which occurred long ago, but which he persistently kept secret until now. The battleship Rodney was, in fact, hit by German bombs held down on it by German fighter aircraft during an attack on Scapa Flow on March the 16th. At that time, Mr. Churchill rasped, the German bombs hit nothing but fell into the sea. The Rodney was England's most powerful battleship after the Nelson was heavily damaged by a mine last December, a fact which Mr. Churchill admitted only 2 months after it happened. In other words, Mr. Churchill is up to his old tricks again, piously admitting British losses a drop at a time, obviously believing that by spreading them thinner over a longer period, they will appear to be smaller. But American radio listeners, acquainted with his tactics, will hardly be duped by him. On the contrary, they will be able to judge for themselves how great England's losses really must have been during the attack on the Norwegian coast, when Mr. Churchill felt himself compelled to cast even more gloom over the already highly depressed British public by making such admissions. Evidently, the worst is yet to come, and the British public must now be gradually prepared for it. Winston Churchill also declared that Germany had prepared her action long before, while England was meticulously observing international law to the letter. Mr. Churchill completely overlooked an article in the London Times, however, which declared on April the 9th that the Supreme War Council had decided on the laying of mines in Norwegian territorial waters as far back as March the 28th. The Times even boasted about the thoroughness with which these mine operations were prepared and put into execution. Evidently, the decisions of the Supreme War Council were not long in reaching Berlin, and certainly nobody can blame Germany for taking protective measures against this flagrant breach of Norway's neutrality. Hence, Mr. Churchill's speech was not so different, after all, from most of his others. Foreign press reports alleging that the negotiations between the King of Norway and the German ambassador in Oslo were broken off were denied by competent Berlin quarters on Thursday night. The negotiations have so far led to no results, but they will be continued. The French Avas agency reported that the occupation of Narvik was first reported by the German High Command, then denied, then confirmed, and is now by no means certain. Avas is wrong. The German High Command issues only carefully examined reports and does not later deny them. Contradictory reports concerning Narvik were spread over the world not by the German High Command but by London, and they then had to be denied by responsible British officers. Further comment on the French dispatch is thus superfluous. Berlin is continuing the third news in English in tonight's transmission for North America. Germany's action in Scandinavia is regarded as a logical countermeasure against the breach of Norwegian neutrality by England and France, the Soviet Russian newspaper Izvestia says. Even during the Finnish conflict, the Western powers wanted to force their way into Scandinavia under the pretense of alleged aid to Finland, in order to create a new battlefield against Germany, the Russian newspaper concludes. The semi-official Romanian news agency, Rador, denied today foreign news reports, according to which several steamers were sunk in the Danube. At the same time, competent German quarters deny London and Paris statements that Germany has sent notes to Hungary, Yugoslavia, and Romania demanding permission for German river police to control Danube shipping. It is pointed out in Berlin that as a result of the British attempt to sabotage Danube shipping, the German government and the governments of the Danube states are conferring on the best means of preventing further incidents. This exchange of opinions has probably led to the reports of an alleged German note to the Danube states.